Hariyadi Audiobooks presents Chapter 12, Mahatma Gandhi's Mantra Collage, from the book Cultivating Inner Peace by Dr. Paul Fleischman, as read by the author.
Chapter 12, Mahatma Gandhi's Mantra Collage. India's great political and religious leader, Mahatma Gandhi, intended his monumental public life to be merely an extension of his inner cultivation of peace. Foremost among Gandhi's peaceful qualities were his reverence for world spiritual literature, his awareness that words transmit feelings as well as ideas, his steady immersion in peaceful language, and his use of linguistic vibrations to transform his followers. Gandhi was different from Whitman in almost every dimension. Whitman had little formal schooling, whereas Gandhi had trained as a barrister in London. Whitman's language was limited to colloquial American English, whereas Gandhi was an educated master of English, Gujarati, Hindi, and other Indian languages. Whitman was primarily solitary and economically marginal. Gandhi made a fortune in South Africa before he took his personal vows of poverty. He was married, fathered four sons, lived in collective households and ashrams, was a beloved, celebrated leader of a nation, a household word around the world in his own lifetime. Whitman was fired from being a clerk in a government office. Gandhi conferenced with prime ministers and kings. Yet the way Whitman and Gandhi studied, read, tuned up to the sacred rhythms around them, then conveyed peace to others, reveals a kinship in their methods of living and self-elevation. Both developed their proto-peaceful inklings through immersion in illuminated language. Gandhi's life became a series of charismatic soul transformations that swept up millions of people in his idealistic reforms. Until late middle age, he lived in South Africa, where he struggled for justice against racial laws and forged his eccentric personal path of vegetarianism, sexual asceticism, and political activism in the service of pacifism. When he returned to live in India, he was already a world figure, and he gradually assumed the mantle of leadership in India's fight for freedom from British rule, and also in his own comprehensive social reform program for India. A description of his enormous power and accomplishments, his hand-carved personal lifestyle, doesn't account for the effulgent love and awe that he evoked in his followers and that has made him symbolic of a new hope for peace as a pragmatic force in the world. That was the product of his spiritual ascension. Mahatma, as he was called by Tagore and came to be known, Mahatma means great soul, broke out of his narrow British professional education and became a self-educating seeker. He shucked his formal schooling and set off alone on an odyssey through world literature, seeking words that would enclose, mirror, explain, and animate the inner truth he intuited but had yet no way of expressing. Throughout his long leadership, Gandhi stressed his debt to his literary ancestors. Like Whitman's, Gandhi's idiosyncratic studenthood did not inform his mind, it transformed his personality. For him, reading was yoga, a sustained discipline directed at liberation from ignorance and suffering. His quixotic and creative leadership of Indian national rebirth was constantly and explicitly referenced to the passages of literature that had inspired him. He didn't invent in a vacuum. He called forth, from the collective library of possibility, its most treasured catalog numbers of tranquil strength. Like Whitman's extensive reading, Gandhi's was a deep inhaling that reconfigured his molecules. He soaked in words of peace to dye himself with new hues of being. Most famous of Gandhi's self-proclaimed literary ancestors was Thoreau, whose essay on civil disobedience became the kernel of the Gandhian Revolution. Gandhi first read it, appropriately enough, in a South African jail. Gandhi had begun to disobey laws he felt were unjust before he ever encountered Thoreau's writings, but he found the essay to be a masterly treatise. It left a deep impression on me. Gandhi biographer Louis Fisher concluded, "There is a Thoreau imprint on much that Gandhi did." What Fisher meant is that from Thoreau, Gandhi captured more than a tactic. He absorbed a mood of indomitable determination to actualize peaceful idealism in daily life. Gandhi's literary pilgrimage wandered backwards to Thoreau's roots in Socrates. Gandhi dissolved himself into the Socratic dialogues, into the world of a faith so deep that tyrannically imposed death was too trivial an incident to interrupt the quest for higher life. Gandhi made the first translations of the Socratic dialogues into his native Gujarati. Gandhi has also recorded in reverential detail how his reading of art critic John Ruskin's book, Unto This Last, and Leo Tolstoy's The Kingdom of Heaven is Within You, provided the inspiration that reorganized his life from bourgeois barrister to prophet and saint. He explicitly stated that he became the man he was as a product of an inner revolution created by passages in Ruskin and Tolstoy. Among other deviations from accepted Indian traditions, Gandhi, the holy man, never accepted any guru, although the transformational teacher-student relationship is usually considered the essence of Hindu spiritual life. In place of a guru, Gandhi accepted three people as having left a deep impress on my life and captivated me. One was a real friend of young adulthood, Ray Chandbhai. But the other two were his literary heroes only, Tolstoy and Ruskin. Tolstoy's Shaker-influenced, independent thinking, profound morality, and truthfulness overwhelmed me. And Gandhi went on to make an intensive study of Tolstoy's books, from which I began to realize more and more the infinite possibilities of universal love. Don't you find it intriguing and even a revealing dissection of the pathways of peace that are woven beneath the visible world, that a bunch of semi-literate rustic American herb farmers, like the Shakers, after their demise, reached out and reformed a 20th century literary intellectual lawyer and politician like Gandhi, thereby putting their peaceful imprint onto modern Asian nation building? But of Ruskin's Unto This Last, Gandhi wrote, "The book was impossible to lay aside. It gripped me. I could not get any sleep that night. I determined to change my life in accordance with the ideals of the book. An instantaneous and practical transformation in my life. The Mahatma's guru was books. Of all books, the Bhagavad Gita ultimately became the most important to Gandhi, functioning as his Bible. The Gita is a poem in rhythmic couplets. Not just its philosophy, but its pulse influenced him. Gandhi himself was a prolific writer, but his full feeling for words of peace emerged not in his private reading nor in his public writing, but in another medium altogether. The prayer service he invented to anchor the life of his ashram. Here he stirred up words of peace from the human collectivity to whirl in rhythmic catalysis and inspirational transformation. The prayer service at his ashram was the psychic center of a man, of a collective of men and women, and of a political, social, and spiritual revolution. Here was the divine communication intended to inspire and inform fasts, poverty, beatings, prison sentences, service to and love of all living things. Prayers at the ashram began at 4 a.m. with Gandhi sitting cross-legged under a tree while his followers seated themselves in a semicircle in front of him. Prayers from many religions were recited, and always in their original languages to keep the vibration true, while Gandhi, like a schoolmaster, would stop the whole service to correct an individual's mispronunciations. Buddhist chants in Japanese, Hindu prayers to Vishnu, Arabic verses from the Quran would follow each other. Then came the affirmation of dedication to Gandhi's principles. We will be nonviolent. We will be truthful. We will not steal. We will be continent. We will not hoard. We will all wear khadi, homespun, not store-bought clothes. We will work with our hands. We will eat simple foods. We will be fearless. We will treat people of all religions equally. And we will work for the eradication of untouchability. This was followed by verses and chants from many Indian religions and languages, mixing Hindu, Islamic, and Zoroastrian scriptures among Christian hymns, with the participants all singing, clapping hands, or keeping time with small symbols, finally culminating in the duns, invocations of God, under his numerous, mellifluous Hindu appellations, recited faster and faster, louder and louder, in thrilling, surging climax. Gandhi was in ecstasy as the names of God rolled over his lips and rocked among his disciples. To close the meeting, someone read in Sanskrit from the most important book in Gandhi's life, the Bhagavad Gita, which could be heard aloud repeatedly over the years at the ashram. At 5 a.m., Gandhi returned to his hut and sat down cross-legged on his bed alone. Gandhi's prayer service was like a church service, except that it embraced all religions rather than one. I am a Christian and a Hindu, a Muslim, and a Jew. Also, the service didn't sanctify the collective routine, but inspired ascetics towards sacrificial rebellion. In that sense, it was more like a tribal war dance It was intended to focus his followers on the exalted and dangerous life and social-political movement to which they had dedicated themselves without reservation. Peace in action. Peace at all costs. The service lit a bonfire of intention. Unlike a war dance, Gandhi's prayer service unified means and ends. It had to inspire risks for peace by inducing not mere courage or fanaticism, but inner peace. In that sense, the prayer service was a dawn lullaby. It tuned the earth around them like a vast harp. Even the echo of this ceremony, recorded on the page and long after its originator's death, makes me feel as if I had just awakened from a dream eruption from another dimension. It is both excitation and soothing, a fusion, a mantric collage of humankind's songs, prayers, and rhythms of peace. With its participants seated in a mandala centering on Gandhi himself, and with the beat accelerating, rolling outward from them, among them, and beyond them, into the sympathetically vibrating membrane of the atmosphere, the process became, in the eyes of its creators, the navel of peaceful, unifying, conscious, and preconscious communication on earth, among the worlds. They were not merely praying, singing, reciting. They were pulsing the heartbeat of peace into their own arteries and into the waiting environment. Peace is a product of both insight and physics. Every fast, strike, and day for Gandhi commenced and ended with scriptural poetry from diverse sources. His use of words was rhythmic, musical, and vibratory. They helped him to retune the strings of himself and his followers daily, like a concertmaster violinist. He avoided reducing words to intellectual sectarian dogma, but he became an extension, a manifestation of them, carrying their notes in his atoms while he attempted to spend the rest of his day in right speech. Peace militants will seek and use words differently than hermetic poets, but Gandhi and Whitman rose to their fullness on wings of rhythm, recitation, and resonance. Their lives reveal a common pattern that would also be found if we were to pursue more biographies in the lives of most people who attain some degree of peacefulness. Many people spontaneously use literature in this living way, as the path of peace dictates, looking for suggestions and provocations that push you back on the U-turn towards possible reconstructions of your own life, the rectifying and illuminating perceptions of the elders. Yet there are dangers in mere book learning. Thoreau cautioned, "We are in danger of forgetting the language which all things and events speak without metaphor. No method or discipline can supersede the necessity of being forever on the alert. Will you be a reader, a student merely, or a seer?" On your own path, peace means listening and speaking as if your words and actions were playing one instrument in the orchestra of the universe. What you say, read, listen to, will influence how your molecules and nervous system dance and what messages you will conduct and broadcast. Whitman's poetry may spring you free of foreshortened time. And Gandhi's duns might, if you could reconstruct them, prepare you for noble social action. The words that you absorb will be important contributors to the peace that you will transmit, intentionally or not. Peace is partly a product of dipping yourself down into a strata of sound. If you were to learn Vipassana meditation, a teacher's chanting might facilitate receptivity in your tissues and fibers to the Dhamma as the Buddha revealed it, because the Dhamma is not only a way of life, but also a vibration. As you orient towards peace and select out distraction, stay tuned.
Pariyati, a non-profit 501c3 organization, offers a wide variety of books, e-books, videos, and audiobooks about the teachings of the Buddha, the Pali language, and Vipassana meditation. Browse our complete catalog at www.pariyatti.org. That's pariyatti.org.